This guy can do it all. He can play, he can write, he can sing. He's got a charismatic stage presence. He's been incredibly generous with us this week. Please welcome John Mayer.
Hello, how are you? My name is John Mayer. I was a student at Berklee College of Music for 2 semesters. I was on the unaccredited John Mayer 2-semester plan, which I completed. And I sort of want to tell you a little bit about it so that we can all sort of be on the same level, so you're not staring at what you think you're staring at. You can stare at who I really am. I went for 2 semesters in fall of 97 and the spring of 98. And they were 2 very different semesters. The first semester, I wanted to be a guitar player. I wanted to be the best guitar player I could possibly be. I wanted to win guitar playing competitions. I wanted there to be a crown, and I wanted to wear it. I wanted to be the best guitar player, the best instrumentalist. I just wanted to be the best. And it was an interesting semester because I never felt like I connected with anything or anybody because I just wanted to be the best. It was an expectation that's so broad, it is indefinable and therefore unreachable. And I had 1 too many clinic naps. I think I was sitting right around there and I fell asleep. You ever fall asleep during a clinic? You ever have that little 5-minute clinic doze off? Then you're up. And there were great players I was falling asleep in the middle of. I shouldn't have been falling asleep. And I really had the question mark of, well, what am I going to do? What does this add up to? What is all this information adding up to? And I went home for the Christmas break and questioned everything. I looked back at everything. I went, do I want to be a guitar? Why is that not clicking in? And I just went back to the pop side of things. I went back to songs. And I had these 2 or 3 records that I lived with. One of them was Radiohead OK Computer. And I just fell in love with that record. Fell in love with that record. And I fell in love with Ben Folds 5, Whatever and Ever, Amen. And I also fell in love with, you know, that Erykah Badu Live record, which you all know from Ensemble. And I went, well, this is what I want to do. I want to be listenable. I want to play music that people want to listen to. And it became my mission statement at that point to go back to Berklee and be the musician at Berklee because I couldn't win this indefinable race. So I said, at the end of the day, I just want to be seated on my bed and I want 3 or 4 people around me at the end of their day after having heard so many notes and taken so many naps in the middle of playing. I just want to be listenable. And when you are listenable, there is no race. There's no first place, second place, third place. You're just listenable. And this is where it takes me into songwriting. The first era of my songwriting began in January or February of my second semester. And I can't say that I went to class as much as I should have, but there was something happening. There was this definition of myself, of my identity. All of a sudden, I found this perfect balance with Berklee. Here's the information coming in, and here's the inspiration going out. And this is the title of my clinic. I want to call it Inspiration Information. It's not just the title of a great Shuggy Otis tune. It is the perfect way to delineate how Berklee is right for you, how Berklee can work. Because a lot of people ask me all the time, should I go? I'm thinking about going, should I go? Was it good for you? Well, I don't know if you should go. Asking if you should go to Berklee, if it's right for you, is like asking, what can I do with a big 18-wheeler semi-truck full of lumber? You can do a lot of things with it. Do a lot of things with it. What do you want to build, man? What are you thinking about coming up with? And that's what the information is. Right now, you're just getting inundated. The information truck is backing up by your docking bay. Eep, eep, minor 4, flat 6, eep, eep, eep. And your hardest job here, because it's also amongst a lot of other people who are trying to do the same thing you're doing, your hardest job is to convert that information into your inspiration. And that's something that nobody can tell you how to do. And the reason that there's a science to music or a science to art is because you can't communicate to somebody in art to tell them how to be artistic. You can't just go, blue, purple, red, green, jealousy. Can't do it. Doesn't sound like anything. You need to communicate it. So, what has to happen? You have to convert music into a science so that you can transmit it. So we give chords names and numbers and chord progressions, and we call it the Nashville numbers, and we have charts, and we have ear training, and we have notation and all these things, so that it can go back into your head and you can convert it back into inspiration. And that's what you really have to do. And that's what I did my second semester, and really found a way to make it click very quickly. I wrote a song called Victoria. I wrote a song called Love Soon, Man on the Side, Sucker. I wrote a song called Comfortable. And I wrote it, let me see where we're facing, 737, 150 Mass Ave in my dorm room. I wrote it, recorded it, mixed it, all that stuff in the dorm room. Because I finally found an outlet for all that information, and it's songwriting. So if you're a songwriter, you're learning a lot of information. You know how to go, one, I'm singing over my one, four, I'm singing over my four minor, one. All right, that's information. That's just information, you know? When you start writing from information, it doesn't work out. You have to convert that information into inspiration. I know that when I go to this chord, it makes me feel like that and takes me back to that place. It's even great that you're in Boston. So you get the information at Berkeley and the inspiration on Newbury Street. Just walk all the way down Newbury Street. And a lot of you guys are writing songs right now that are about other things. They're about, I want to write a song about knights and shining armor. I want to write a song about the days of yore and kings in medieval. And that's cool for an exercise, but when it comes down to actually writing a song, what connects with people is you connecting with yourself. So we're in October right now. So you're still in the honeymoon period with being at Berkeley. But within the next 2 weeks, I'm excited to find out who on a Sunday night, in the middle of the night, gets up and goes, where the fuck am I? And just starts walking. Just starts walking. And when you do that, you may not have done it yet, but when you finally go, what the hell? I'm in Boston. I'm in Boston. Where's home? Now we're talking about songwriting. Now we're talking about taking the information, taking Pat Pattison's lyric writing class, who can teach you the information, and converting that into inspiration. And you can go anywhere from, and the truth is, I miss you. That's what, listen, Pat Pattison and I both will tell you, that's great. You don't need to talk about, and the truth is, like a knight in shining armor on a white stallion running across the plains and you don't have to, but you could, because you have the information. And this goes for guitar players. This goes for singers. It goes for anybody. How many people in this room are songwriters? So you'd like, okay. So I'm going to address this on a songwriting level for a moment. But before I do, I want to tell you the most important piece of information that applies not only to your musical career, but your entire life. And I've seen it work, and I've seen it not work. And it's 100% true. Number one thing you have to do before you set out on any other goal or any other course is to define your expectations. Number one thing, on the outset of every single project, record, tour, define your expectations. Everyone in this room wants to make it. But I question how you would recognize making it. What is making it? Well, what do you want to be? Who in here wants a record deal? Would it be nice to have a record deal, right? We want a record deal. Okay, well, what does a record deal look like? What does making it look like? Do you want to sell 1 million copies, 2 million copies? Well, okay, let's say selling 2 million copies is like selling 10 million copies 10 years ago. So let's say you say to yourself, my expectation is that I want to be an artist and I want to put records out and I want to sell millions of copies. If that's your expectation, great. Then you sort of skip straight to another questionnaire. You know, okay, if you answered yes to, do I want to be a pop star? Do I want to make music for as many people as possible? Now you have to sort of change your game to fit the expectation. You now have to wonder about, is your song shorter than 4 minutes? Do you get to your chorus fast enough? These are things you have to absolutely do. And you also have to compromise, and you also have to play the game. Who in here thinks that the public is mostly dumb? You think the public is mostly dumb? Let me tell you something. The public is about 300 million times smarter than you. Public is not dumb. For those of you who said, yes, I want to be a pop star, and yes, I would like to have a record deal, and yes, I'd like to make this happen, the first thing you should know is that the public is always smarter than you. If you put a song out and you go, that's it. That's it. Watch it go. Light fuse. Stand back. Everybody stand back. It's going to be a hit. It's going to be a hit. It's going to be a hit. And it goes like this. Who is smarter than who? Your big smart pop song went nowhere. The public just told you, they're smarter than you on that one. Because you said you had it and they said, I don't think so. And you didn't have it. So they're smarter than you. And that's what you have to deal with. They're smarter. And by defining your expectations, if you decide that you want to be a pop star, that's not a dirty word. It just means, pop just means popular. Frank Sinatra was a pop star. Jimi Hendrix was a pop star. Lots of people were pop stars. What kind of pop star? Lots of people are jazz musicians. What kind of jazz musician? You can define the genre any way you want. So if you said you want to be a pop star, then you have to look at your songs. There's also people here who are a little dishonest about what they really want to be. And I think if you want to be famous, if you want to make music for as many people as possible, just come out and say it. Don't say, I want to be indie. I'm just going to be an independent artist. And really secretly wish that you wanted to be a pop star. Because from the very beginning, it's disingenuous. There's nothing wrong with saying, I want to play music for as many people as possible without compromising the things that I have to be as an artist. And that's what I've done. Sony Music doesn't come into the studio when I'm making a record, but I also know what's going to be a hit or what stands the chance of being a hit and what just doesn't. And it's a level of honesty with yourself that you have to have before you hand your music out to anybody else. So that's sort of what I want to say about expectations. If you only recognize success as a record deal and a big fat publisher's clearinghouse oversized Tiger Woods check and a dinner and then going to the top of the roof and screaming, I made it! Most of you will be stunning failures. I'll tell you right now, most of you, I didn't do it that way. But if you define success by putting out your first record and selling 5,000 copies and going to have sushi when you say, yeah, I got 5,000 copies. When I sell 5,000 copies, I'm going to consider this a success. That's the difference between people who walk this earth happy and people who walk the earth constantly unfulfilled because they've never defined the finish line. I know artists who sold 2 million records. It's not enough because they never said what making it was going to be. They just had this feeling like it was their life. They were just going to know. It's not going to work like that. It's just not going to work like that. I consider that my best record is Continuum. I think it's my best, sort of most solid piece of work. And thank you. And it is because I had gotten to a point in my career where I felt like I was about to get pigeonholed. And I'll tell you the story, and I don't know how many people know this intimately, but here's where the public is smarter than you. I wanted a song called Come Back to Bed. I thought it was going to be huge. I thought it could change people's minds about stuff. No, I'm going to make you like stuff you don't like because it's good enough. Hey, I don't know about. And the song didn't work, and I was disheartened. And then they said, what about Daughters? Can you put Daughters out? Now, I had thought, again, public's smarter than me, I thought that that's just this little song that lives on the record. That's like track 8. It's track 9. That's the one you discover 3 months in, like, oh, this is here. And they said, no, they've researched it. They really want this to go. I think it can be a hit. And I was like, I don't want it to be a hit. I would rather not have a hit with this song, because this song is going to peg me forever as sensitive songwriter guy. And I gave myself sort of a 3 strikes and you're out rule, and I thought Daughters would have been somewhat of the 3rd strike. And the worst thing I could have ever thought of was being the artist where they go, the record company says, look, you give us the 3 we want, and you know we want, and you can do whatever you want to do. I'm sure there's some songs on Nickelback records that Nickelback loves. Somewhere in the back there, 9, 10, 11. I'm sure. I've got to imagine. Got to imagine there's ones on the set list when they get up to it. They're like, I can't wait to play this one. Thank God I was able to write those other three that I know they needed and I don't mind making, but okay, you know. So I say, please, I get on the phone with Don Einar, at the time was, I think, sort of just the head of all music. And I said, Donnie, I can't do it. Donnie, you realize if I do this, I'm going to be sensitive singer-songwriter guy for the rest of my life, and I'm too young. I'm too young to be anything but a guy who can put out whatever he wants. I said, fine, you know, I get it, I get it. We won't put it out. If you don't want it, we won't put it out. And it made it out. I don't know how. It leaked. But how upset can I be, because it won Song of the Year that year for Daughters. But something else was at stake, which was my identity. So it came out and it was a hit, and it was another sort of feeling like, wow, you don't know who I am now. Now you think I'm even more that. Because when you put a song on a record, it can be anything. When you put it on the radio, you're saying something about it. You're saying, this is my racehorse. This is what I want you to think of me as. And it came out and it was a hit, and it was a funny moment because while it's a hit and it's going number one, I'm still going, who did this? So after that, I said, look, I need to erase. I need to stop. I need to find a different pursuit musically so I can shake it all up. And when I tell you about defining your expectations, I define my expectation very well on this. I said, I started a trio, John Mayer Trio, with Steve Jordan. Thank you. And Pino Palladino. I'm more famous to me than anyone I've ever met in my life. Those guys, when I'm sitting at a table with them, I look around and I go, does anybody realize who's sitting at this table together? And I went on a tour, and I played in the blues trio. And I did my best. I don't think it was the greatest in the world, but I did my best, and I went into a project. And I didn't think it was going to sell millions of copies, and it didn't. And a lot of the tension that came out that year between myself and the record company is that they couldn't understand that I didn't want to make a record. It didn't think I made a record that was made for 4 million people. That it's okay, it's a sliding scale, your expectations. Let's just do this because it feels right. And it felt very right. And it's because of that tour and because of that exploration that I was able to come back in the studio and learn fully how to take the guitar playing side and the writing side and put it together the best I've done it so far. And this is the song sort of that I'm going to play it like they're here behind me. So think of it like they're here, but they're on mute.
Reflection with a different name. Got
It's just raw information. What you should start doing is seeing yourself as a separate being from anyone else in this room. You, each and every one of you now, I want to go home and put an incorporated after your name in your head. You are now a being, you are incorporated. You are now going to take information and go, I could use that for this and that and that. Don't show your cards to anybody else. Some guy comes along, he sounds like, thinks he sounds better than you. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. But work on your thing, and then you can figure out what makes you you artistically. And then you can access information. When I go into the studio, when I sit in with an artist, I'm accessing information. I'm not accessing, it's like a library. I go, I'm going to take this out, and this, sort of like being a DJ. This will work. But not by way of just playing everything. And that's what I wish people could do more. I don't know if you can do it real time. I don't know, maybe this is just the time you get everything and you worry about sort of figuring it out later. But I think it'd be an interesting idea to look at the information, learn it, and then immediately start figuring out how you use it or how you don't use it. You know, drummers overplay, guitar players overplay, singers oversing, and songwriters overwrite. So it's a matter of how you begin to shape. Anybody ever jam, and they jam too much, and they run out of ideas, and they get that itchy feeling on the way home, like they just gave up too much, like they just somehow sort of empty. I played everything, and I saw the end of my own musical existence. I was on the dirt. I was just ended up in the rough, or the golf course. I don't know. Ugh. That is just a misappropriation of what you know. You've just all of a sudden gotten to the bottom of the trick bag, and there was a hole in it. And you just going, ooh, why did we jam? We jammed on E for an hour. I was in an ensemble class, the great Dennis Montgomery III. I was in an ensemble class yesterday, and the song that we were playing on was a great song. It's On and On by Erykah Badu. You know? See, the women are like, I know this. It's two chords. They're both sort of the one. Just a one chord the whole time, right? Now, here I come into this. I'm like hot shot, hot stepper. I come into the studio. I've played with everybody. And I put on the guitar, and they're playing this song. All right, here we go. And I'm going, all right, I'm comping. And then Dennis says, John, take it. And I'm going, and I'm going, oh, terrible. I don't have it. My guitar playing went away. What happened to my guitar playing? And then something came back to me, and I said, dude, you're just playing over a one. What can you play over that? And I just want you to also stay awake to that. What? Look at the chord arrangement. How am I supposed to solo for 30 seconds or a minute or 90 seconds over a one? I got nothing for that. Nothing. Nobody has anything for that. It's all going to sound weird. It's just screwed up from the get-go. It's playing on a one. So that's where I want to take you into playing some songs. And, to sort of keep it all coherent, this is a song that when I wrote it, I knew two things. I knew that I thought it was pretty good. I thought it was great. And I also knew there was never a chance that it could ever make it on the radio or be a hit. Would die on the radio. And I have songs that I know that with. While I'm writing, I go, you're going to be a quarterback for this record. Sometimes I go, you're just going to be the kicker. You just come out for the field goal.
Tonight start this train. I wanna get off and go home again. I can't take the speed it's moving in. I know I can, but honestly, won't someone stop this train?
There's information and there's inspiration. And I could not have written that song if I didn't go to Berklee College of Music. That is a fact. It brings life to everything in your lead line when you have chords underneath that are interesting. You could sing the same thing. If the chords aren't right, it's not going to come alive. And you're not even going to be stimulating your mind as a composer, as a singer. You know, a lot of times you hear a song that doesn't have vocals on it yet, and it's sort of like a jump rope going around. and you're thinking about how you're going to get into it. How am I going to sing over it, right? How am I going to come in over it? That all in itself is an art form of how you're going to change it up a little bit, how you're going to use the juxtaposition of the chords, not just go in with the one on the one, you know. And then it also matters what the music is you're listening to. You know what I love? What I thought was one of the greatest melodies I've ever heard was...
Wait, Sam, watching the clock, it's 4 o'clock, it's got to stop. Tell him, taking no more, she practices her speech as she opens the door.
You know, it's that is, whoa, that's huge, huge, because it's got the melody and the chordal thing and the lyrics and the phonetics. And those are the things that matter. You could go,
waiting, watching the clock, it's 4 o'clock.
You know, still a good melody, but it all sort of falls apart. So in the assembly line, I can't stress enough how when you give, it's, for me, my guitar playing is sort of the first part of it's the steel mill. And then it becomes the shape of a car and it comes up here and I go, how am I gonna go in over that? So I can't stress enough that you have to have compositions that are inherently interesting. And I'm working on stuff right now where it's... Already it's round. Exists in a very interesting way. A very interesting way on the guitar already.
Working the dead of night when the roads are quiet. Deep down looking down. Step on through and chasing the yellow lights. See you out and out and waiting in the room. And dead on you.
Construct from that point on. It's like blackjack. It's like, what were your cards? I don't know. What was it? So, and I want to show you one thing on the electric guitar. So, what I want to do is show you for a moment economy. I want to show you economy. All I did, if you break it down, all right, put it back into science. That's like a crazy, B minor sus something, right? And that's like a crazy E minor 7 sus something. And that's G. So, call it B minor, E minor, G. A or whatever that crazy thing is. I don't remember. It's all color and shape in here now. And if you reverse it, you go, oh, I could have done that. I saw this great video of people waiting out in line and someone said, he's just like the master of duh. Someone said, he's like the master of duh. And I thought, damn right I'm the master of duh. Because you don't need to know my information. You don't need to see me figuring it out. You just need to know what the final result is, not how I got there. So I want to show you sort of what you can do already with what you know, you know? So let me get my electric out real quick. I'm going to bring someone out in a moment, but I just want to do this real quick.
So, all right, everybody's a guitar player, you know? Everybody knows your pentatonic scale, you know? But the right hand, you could go home right now and play the same thing. If you look at it horizontally, it's very easy. You go, oh, it's just that little finger. But start thinking about hitting it on a vertical level, hitting it on a depth level. So, I haven't done anything. I'm just playing in the pentatonic. It's all really, that's all it is, but it's right hand and it's internal timing and you build your timing up. It's a fundamental thing. Instead of going through all the different scales, whoa. I want everyone to go home and whatever your instrument is, just do the simplest thing and just feel it. Just get a feel going. It's so much more listenable because I'm phrasing it, because there's dynamics. There are really interesting dynamics. And this is what I want to get to with dynamics for a moment. What you're doing right now is you're learning the entire shape of everything, all things, the shape, the entire perimeter of the room. But if you start shaving it off and choosing what you like, you get a dynamics thing. So I can go, I can be late on the four, on the two and the four, the snare.
It's all a feel thing. It's all a feel thing.
So on a blues level, Tomo Fujita, everybody. So we'll do this in A minor, so we can clean the ear out from the G I was just doing. So we'll do a slow blues in A, right? All right, right, so. So you're going to solo over it, right? So let's say you go in on the four. It's always cool to start soloing on the four, but you go like this. Right? All right, what, whatever. Because here's why. Because you already just went into the high one. You know, so I've already gone, no. Dynamically, I've now shut everything down before that. By doing that, anything lower than that is now a letdown. I can't go. You're moving backwards. All of a sudden, you've used your trick. You've used your, if you were a singer and you came out like that, people would go, whoa! Someone like first notice. na 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 na. And you go, all right, that's impressive. The song, you go, wow, that's neat. But you don't get a lot of time after that, right? So here it is again with the pacing. So you need to go to the one. You gotta get there, you gotta get. All right, here's where you pace it out. Because I've spun you around. I've spun it around and I didn't go to the top all of a sudden. And I just because it's so great to hear this man play. Tomo, take your time like you've never taken your time and see if anybody walks out because they're bored. That's the best I heard you play. So that's where that, for me lately, is something that I work on. Thank you, Tomo. Tomo. I'm going to show you something on the acoustic now. Because you have a dynamic ceiling. All things have a dynamic ceiling, and you never want people to see it. It's almost like in the spy movies when you put the spray on the lathe. You never want to show people where your top is. And then you're just working down. Then you have two more choruses. If you're ever playing and you go like this, you're like, oh, you need another one? You want another one? Oh. It's all vocabulary, and I don't want to get into that. Well, B.B. King could kick so-and-so's ass with one note. It's less to do with that and more to do with how you put it in a lyrical. Tomo played a lyrical solo that had everybody going, talk to me, talk to me, talk to me, talk to me. And when it gets too sort of over-dynamic too fast, then it just cracks. It's like a personality in somebody. You go, I got to take a walk. And I want to show you how that works on the acoustic, because I know a lot of you who are singer-songwriters will, like I did starting out, be playing solo acoustic or in a duo or something. So I want to show you something on the acoustic that I think is very important. Acoustic has a ceiling, and it's a very tricky one. You play solo acoustic, it is the equivalent of being on a television show with close camera shots. It's very close. It's very intimate.
So, all you get...
This is the most that you can get out of your acoustic guitar.
And that's as much as you can get out of your acoustic guitar.
That's your ceiling right there. You have to work backwards from that. You have to reverse engineer. So, I'm going to play you a song. Tune up just out of paranoia. And I want you to see and feel sort of how it's built and gives you the sensation of a full band because of the way the dynamics are laid out. And then I'll go into why, I think. And if you're watching this on YouTube and you are a fan, you may want to stop now because I don't want to take all the fun away from you by showing you how I do it. But this is how it is. So it's always bugged me to solo on the acoustic guitar. I don't like soloing on it. I don't like hearing people bend notes on the acoustic guitar for the simple fact that most of the time you just can't bend up to the note. And it doesn't sound right to me. I know the notes don't sound full. So you just have to play by a different rule when you play acoustic guitar. So I'm going to play this song for you now. Now when I wrote this song, I went, you're going to go out there, little song, and you're going to sell this record. Don't always have to be expressions of I'm good. I want to show you that I'm good. There are certain singers or certain players, you can tell that their overall objective is to make sure you know they're good. And this sort of gets into the overplaying thing, and it's not like that was the most demure performance I've ever given of a song. But people see more about your playing and your spirit and your personality and your performance than you're really smart enough to understand that they do. When you're a drummer and you just play, now you might be going like this, I know what this is. This is just, there's all these other things I want to do. But to anyone else looking, they go, that guy is shining through, I get that, I feel that. And you have to give people credit. Remember, they're smarter than you. You have to give people credit that they can see the things you're not aware of. And when you can do things that don't always telegraph, because what I always say is, if you want me to think you're great, just write it down on a piece of paper and hand it to me. Please think I'm great. I can do that. I can think you're great. But I want to feel something. And again, there's things about you that you're trying too hard to find other things. You're trying to find the newest, hottest, fastest thing. You don't even know what I'm looking at. You got to give me some credit that I went, this guy's got a thing. I'm like, that guy's got a thing. Believe me, I can see into it. And everyone else can see into it. And if you start thinking about working on that other axis of that soul thing, that feeling thing, and trust that people will see you're good. You don't have to play your newest, hottest thing for people to see you're good. I could have gone on a guitar solo thing. I know exactly where I would have gone. Okay, but then I would have lost it. You know, people will see through it. People can tell. I give them a lot of credit, you know.
I was just wondering, I've had a kind of a hard time lately trying to write stuff that is like speaks to people, and it is me, but it's not really me. And I'm sure...
You're trying to write songs that speak to people, but they're not speaking to people?
They are, but it's more like because I'm saying it. But at the same time, it's not really me.
But it's not addressing yourself. How old are you?
If
you
don't I'm 18.
18?
Yeah.
I think that has to do with a certain... you haven't made the trip inside, as I call it. Truly made the trip inside. And that's what Boston is. Take walks. Look around. Get out of the 150 Mass Ave, Boylston, Uchida building. Axis of evil sometimes. And get out. And... I was having the same problem. I'm having the same problem now. I went in the studio for 2 days, thousands of dollars, going to the studio to record a song, what I thought was a song, and it's just a pretty good idea. Mm-hmm. So I get into a car, 2 hours later, the sun's going down, it's 55 degrees, I can smell wood in the air, and I'm on the way up to Boston, and I got a Dunkin' Donuts, and all of a sudden I go, wow, I got a lot to say. And I think it has to do with exploring, just getting out and looking around. There's a lot, you know, your inside, at some point your inside is going to go, get down here, you know? And when you do, so here's the thing, what's wrong with being able to practice and learn the ability to express and practice on expressing things you don't feel yet? Because what you're learning is the technique. And then when you finally take the information you're learning and put it with the inspiration of, where am I? Where am I? Who are my new friends and what happened to my old friends and what? It'll happen, I promise. I promise you, you're going to have your own little, like, whoa, 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 whoa. I had it, middle of October. I was like, I get it, I'm at Berkeley. And all of a sudden I went, whoa. This ultimate, look, you might hit a little panic thing. You might hit an anxiety thing. Some of you may have already hit the, whoa, 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 what? I gotta walk, I gotta take a walk, I gotta take a walk, I gotta take a walk, I gotta go outside, I gotta take a walk. That's your inside going, get down here. Which I don't think is a bad thing. I think it's terrible at first because you have to sort of make friends with the truest part of the missing and the need. And I don't want to say darkness, but emptiness. And when you finally connect with that, you're going to write 6 in a row because you're going to know how to. You're going to know how to take that idea. God, how do I ever do this and that and that? And why did I get this crappy letter from a friend who says they don't want to be a friend anymore? Why did I... You'll know how to express it. So I understand the need to want to finish a song and go, going to Fridays. You know, I used to do that all the time. I used to love writing a song and going out to dinner. Because when you write a song, when you create something, you get this feeling, especially here, where you're constantly in an identity crisis because you see everyone else doing what you want to do. All of a sudden, your chest goes out and you go, you don't have what I wrote. And that is the greatest feeling in the world. Taking a walk because you know you have a song and you're just going to come back after dinner and finish that bridge. Ooh, better drug than anything I've ever heard about in my life. Ever. That is the high of all life. You've created something for free that will give you identity and purpose and the feeling of being awake in every way. And it'll happen. But in the meantime, get the house ready for it. Okay, great question. Great question. Is songwriting something you can get better at? Songwriting is a tricky thing because nothing you've done in the past can truly help what you're doing in the future in terms of the inspiration of writing a song. I am at the same level of challenge in writing my next record as I was in my last record. It's the same game. I promise you we go for the same, we try to run the same ball down the field to try to get to a song. You cannot prepare yourself. It's not a cumulative experience. You can't say, well, you know, I did real good on Gravity, so I'm going to just do that again here, because if that was the case, then once I'd written Gravity, I would have written 30 more like it. And it's not the case, and it's not the case for anybody here. But what you can do is, again, inform with information your inspiration so that when that sunroof opens up and you know something's about to happen, or I'll book studio time, I can tell now, I can identify the seismic sort of activity that something's going to come down. And when you do find that beautiful 90 minutes of the skies parting and you go, oh, I'm getting the connection, you can be more prepared with the information of how to take that inspiration and make it happen. But in terms of inspiration rodeo, it can't happen. It will never happen. You can't ever, 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 ever have a song that you like by just really wanting a song. A song rewards truth and true need for expression, not the need for another song. It never works.
What was it about Stop This Train that made you think it wouldn't be a radio hit? Because when I listen to that, that sounds like magic to me.
Well, it is. Thank you. It is. That's another good question. You just sort of have to understand what the capacity, what the expectation is. Stop This Train is, okay, maybe they would have put it on the radio, but they would have edited the hell out of it. And I didn't want it edited. The soul of that song from the very beginning dictates what it wants to be. So you don't have to cut corners on it. When you write a song that has a killer chorus, you may have to do a little selling out on it. You may have to do a little selling out. But on Stop This Train, I went, this is beautiful and cinematic and lush, and I don't expect most people. Understanding someone's attention span is not thinking they're dumb. It's working within somebody's mind frame. And I just think after you go from Disturbia into bling 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 bling, it's a lot to ask of Joe Sixpack, as you would say. It's a lot to ask. And I want to be able to do all things. And maybe Me and All My Friends gets people into the record to go, wow, Stop This Train, I never heard anything like that, I love that. Instead of going, Stop This Train, it wouldn't work. And I think if you can understand, it's basically Know Your Audience 101 is what that is. I want to ask another question. Who here would never compromise their art for success? You would never compromise your art if you're going to put it in. Good. That's the end. You do compromise your art for success. When people say, you go in that office and you don't compromise a thing, you're going to walk out with nothing. Because really what they mean to say is, don't compromise the things you can't live without. You can compromise a bunch. All right, you know what? I can take that part of the song out for the radio edit. I can do it. I can do it. Fine. When somebody says, you got to cut a verse out of Stop This Train, then I go, I can't do that. That I can't do. So compromise is huge, and you learn how to compromise that which you can give away and defend that which you can't, and very often they are back-to-back in sort of a trade. You know. Co-writing is very difficult because you take on someone else's ego as well. If you go into the studio and you go to co-write and you get nothing, not only are you upset because you didn't have anything, but you now feel empathy-wise upset that you went into the studio with this person and you couldn't give them anything. Which is why I'll always say, let's just go in the studio, and if it doesn't work, we'll just get Chinese food and watch TV for a half an hour, and we'll be done. It's very difficult. When I'm not the world's best co-writer because I don't have that Nashville legal pad over lunch sort of approach. Like, here's what I was thinking about. If that's love calling, take a message. You know? I don't have that. But what I can do is listen to people. And a lot of times, like in the case of Eric or in the case of Alicia, you can listen to them as a fan and go, as a fan, here's what I want to hear you sing. When I did a song with Buddy Guy, and it was I've Got Dreams to Remember by Otis Redding, and all I wanted to do was hear Buddy sing it. And as a fan, I went, here's what I'd like to hear. So when you go into writing with someone, for me, I go, here's what I want to hear you do. And I think for me, the most successful writing project I've had was with Alicia on her last record, on the song called Lesson Learned. And I was telling Alicia for over a year, I said, Alicia, I want to hear you get beat. I want your music to be like a painting. I think you could do this avant-garde sort of thing. It's a concept record. It's beautiful. And take people to, because a lot of the lyrical motif takes place on the street. It takes place, you know, or it takes place nowhere, and it's sort of like, you done me wrong, listen, the last time you're going to do me wrong, I'm out of here. She hasn't done so bad on that. But what I wanted to hear was this sort of, when she goes, he broke my heart, and now it's raining, just to rub it in. You go, wow, it's raining just to rub it in. I'm at your door, I feel so crazy about it. And now all of a sudden you're in. And I just wanted to bring that element, my information to her inspiration, you know. And now by the time you get to in the bridge, kills me. Oh, God. What? Falling down, ain't falling down if you don't cry when you hit the floor. Whoa. Now just to hear her do that, I enjoyed a tasty margarita after that bridge. But that's really what it's about for me as a co-writer. I couldn't write a song. Faith Hill called me and I can you write a song? And I said, yeah, what are you thinking about? Like, what's on your mind? What's happening? What are you thinking about? And it didn't end up working because I don't think it was going to end up being a co-writing situation. It was like, will you make me one? And I couldn't do it, and I felt really bad, and I didn't want to offend her, but I couldn't do it because I don't know what's going on in her life. I don't know the intimacy of it. And so I have to know somebody enough to sort of take on their mentality and express their mentality in my way. So I do have to say that in the conventional sense, I'm not a very good co-writer at all. I just have to have that affinity for somebody.
I was just wondering when you knew you wanted to sing your own songs and that you can imagine anybody else singing them and feeling it the way you do.
I knew I had to sing my own songs when I couldn't imagine anybody else singing them. And I was a singer by sort of default, because I was just starting to write songs, put chords together, put lyrics on it. And I was starting to make observations that didn't belong to anybody else, and it would have felt dead wrong. But so I caught up. It's about running changes. I was putting records out while I was learning how to sing. I'm still a major label recording artist putting music out while I'm learning to use an MPC, because I want to learn how to sequence just drums. Because I want to take a J. Dilla, Pete Rock, Detroit sort of drum thing, and I want to put tunes on top, because so far it's just samples. So my new thing that I have to study to get to is to find that sort of, you know, and how do I find a way that's authentic to go on top of it and put a song on top? Because so far it's just these, whatever the things are. What if you could take that bass and that kick, you know, kick and that hat and the way it's late and the way it just goes and put something on top of it and little lyric change, you know, chord changes and lyrics. So that's what I'm trying to figure out.
We are entertainers, and we serve a particular purpose for society. And that's something I always struggle with, is whether I should write political songs, whether I should write happy songs, whether I should just write something that someone can cry to or laugh to.
Wait, but about 4 weeks. The answer will be apparent.
exactly.
And that's a... I'm sorry, was...
I just wanted to know, especially in this time, this critical time, what you think your role is as a public figure.
I feel like somebody came to me in the middle of the night and asked me what I wanted to talk about, and I sort of spoke in my sleep, and now this is what's happened. These are great questions that I have answers to, because I think about it all the time. And this gives you a distinct advantage as songwriters, is that nobody knows right now how they feel about anything. How could you really be expected to write a song about something when nobody knows what's going on or how they feel? I think part of that has to do with a cultural climate that is sort of unique, but a lot of it has to do with the decades. So we're in the eighth year of the decade. Well, you look at 2008. Well, what's coming in and what's going out and what's coming in? Well, you don't know yet, but look at 1998. What was going out? Boy bands were started, sort of beginning to fizzle out. It was hot for boy bands. Then around 2000, 2001, bam, Norah Jones, me, Jack Johnson, Coldplay. Foom, 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 foom. We want to hear things that really address a musical element and an emotional element. 1988, who was the hottest bands? Motley Crue, Winger, Warrant. I loved them all. But about 1990, 1991 comes Kurt Cobain and Nirvana and Soundgarden and Pearl Jam and Mudhoney and Screaming Trees, and everybody goes, this is who we are for the next 10. We are really in this moment right now, not just politically or culturally. Musically, we are not quite sure what we want to hear, but we know we're sick of what's out there now. So you have this unbelievable ability that you don't normally get to figure out who you're going to be and how you're going to change the game. Because when I came out in 2001, and Dave Matthews' band and David Gray had made it, but when I came out in 2001, 2002 and 2003, if you were a male singer-songwriter, you were in the door. You were getting signed. So you now have the opportunity that I had 10 years ago to figure out, look at what's out there now, look at what's happening, how do I want to respond to that, and how do I want to put something out that's going to cleanse people's ears, and they go, oh, yes. And I think it's going to come back to some sort of real supreme sort of dignity and authenticity. And I think it depends on, I don't want to say it depends on who wins the election, but I think it depends on how people feel about the next 4 years. And I think that people aren't, everything is on hold, how to feel, how to react. So people are in a real funny place right now. And I think if you could write a song about that, imagine attacking that right now, putting a song out about, I don't know what I feel. All I know is I'm not quite scared, but I'm not quite excited. And I'm just sitting on my hands. Everybody's just sitting on their hands. So how could you be expected to write a song to connect to people when people are sort of disconnected at the moment? But it's wide open for you. You know, it's wide open. And I think that's exciting.
I just finished a CD, and I'm just getting, you know, ready to launch, I guess, like the marketing campaign to get the music out there.
And what year in Berkeley are you?
This is my last semester.
So, okay, good. Okay,
yeah, so finished it. Now, as a starting artist, when you first started, what did you find to very, very helpful to market your music, to get it out there, besides the obvious stuff like MySpace, Facebook?
Good songs.
Good songs.
Good songs. That's it. That's it. Good songs. I promise. I promise. You get on stage and you play a good song. Like, I mean a good song. Not a song that technically has all its body parts, but I mean a banging song, a song. You will have people waiting outside the door. Some of them may have business cards. Some of them may just have bad weeks. They just want to talk to you. A good song will connect all of the time. And that's the difference between somebody coming up to you at Berkeley, if you play a good melody, you play a good solo, you're in a good ensemble, in a good calf show, and somebody comes up and they go, hey, come here, that was great, man, that was great. So, man, we could get together and play sometime. What was that thing you were doing? What was it? Will you show me that? That's all very predatory, a taking. Whether they want to take a little bit and just play with you or take it all and just play what you've got and send you home. It's very predatory. And something happens when you play a good song for people who aren't musicians. And they go, they come up to you and they go, thank you. Thank you so much. My dad just died, or I just had, they will open their hearts to you right in front of you, and you're still sweating and drinking a Gatorade, and they're going, my dad had a stroke, and I don't even know what to do. But listen, that song, thank, and they'll give you a hug. That's a hell of a lot better than, was that a Mixolydian? And I do want to answer your question. It really is about the song. When someone says, should I get a tattoo? I'm like, is it a good tattoo? I don't know. How good is the product? And whether it comes out on a cell phone or it comes out on some new product that hasn't been made yet. By the way, I will be introducing the new iPod at the end of this. it doesn't matter. People are always going to need a new song. You are technology proof. While people are taking cardboard boxes with picture frames and paperweights out of their office every 6 to 8 months because of technology change, people no longer have Napster, now it's Verizon Cast or it's BlackBerry. People who write songs are always going to be safe because they're always going to need what you have.
How do you do it? Like, how do you, with all that pressure, still make great music?
I don't think the two are related. I am technically rich and famous, but. But what I have and what Berkeley's given me and what practice and dedication has given me is the fact that I am not rich from being famous. And I think that's a huge distinction. When you're rich from being famous, you are theirs. You are a slave to that thing. That's where you go, I love myself some vodka here at Pure Nightclub for the next 20 minutes and I pick up my check, you know. My musical experience, my musical life has never intersected with the sort of public application of media and press and stuff. Almost to my surprise, there were times when I felt so much heat on me from that other sort of glare that I went, are people going to want to come to the show? Are people just, they must be sick of the pictures of me just walking around or ducking my head or hiding behind backpacks. It's got to be over. It's got to be over. And I would go on tour, and there'd be 25,000 people in Houston, and not a single mention of it. And I'll also tell you this, in terms of media, I went through an experience that killed my superego, murdered it dead, stabbed 47 times. John Mayer, as in John Mayer's concept of John Mayer, is dead. Dead. And I miss it, because it was fun to be like, I'm pretty much the shit. But what was that? What was that image? What did that feel? What did I get out of that? I got the sensation of people thinking I was cool. But who's to say that even the sensation of people thinking I was cool was real? I just meant I went to blogs that when people said, oh, I like this guy, and I shut it off, and I went, hey, people like me. Or you go to a blog, and they go, this guy's a douchebag, and you go, oh, God, I'm a douchebag. None of it ever really mattered. None of it ever really mattered. And I have this new saying, if it happened on the internet, it didn't happen. The internet's just the internet. You don't go somewhere on the internet. Hey, go here on the internet. Your ass is in a chair. You're not going anywhere. You know? So what's happened to me in terms of media stuff, which never killed the music. The music has never been at risk. I've never felt it. Which, to my surprise, you go on stage, you walk around, people go, I love your music. People go, hey, John. And I'm like, don't tell me. And they go, I just want to tell you how much I love your music. I think you're the best. Bye. And I go, wow. So does that mean that what I think people think about me is always wrong? And the answer is yes. What you think people think about you is always wrong. No matter how wrong it is, it's always either a little bit wrong or all the way wrong. And all you can do, and all I can do now, is live right here and right here. Not what somebody wrote and what comes up in a Google News alert. I'm not slave to comments anymore. You know, too many people have comments. And by the way, most of these people have comments. If I ever went to their house with some sort of tracking device on what their IP number was, and I'm like, the door would open up and I'd be expecting to see something out there like this. Oh, Hey, what are you, nine? So I heard that you said that I was a douchebag. Oh, you want me to sign that for you? Yeah, we can get a picture. We can get a picture. It's not really happening. All that happens is the people you meet, the friends you have, the lovers you have, your fans, the people who exist in your immediate space. You cannot control what happens in the ether. None of it's real. None of it.
Want your new song?
Yeah!
All right, I'll play you a new song, and I'll play you a new song that is, second verse isn't done. The second verse isn't good enough, and the bridge isn't good enough, so it's not done yet. But because I've had such an amazing experience here where people have opened up so instantly and deeply in playing songs that they just wrote 4 days ago and just opening up, I feel like this is my giving back to you. So here's a song that I'm not quite done with yet.
On a sailboat I am, slowly floating nowhere. Lost the memories of where I am and why. Black ocean churning, a million stars are burning. Planetariums were right about the sky. Oh, once upon a day I set off on a journey, wishing on the wind to take me far from home. Now I'm on the waves and I'm taking on water, hard to see. I won't always be alone. There was a time the sun was high and centered on me, but it dipped behind my back and settled down. I used to square up with the land, used to size it in my hand, but it fell behind the line that meets the sky. Oh, once upon a day I set off on the journey, wishing on the wind to take me far from home. Now I'm on the waves and I'm taking on water, hard to see. I won't always be alone inside this storm, whipping in the wind, my sail is torn. In other words, lands I'm in are not my own. Oh, 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 oh. Gravity. bring me down.
I am.
Oh, I never know what makes this man with all the love that his heart can stand. Dream of ways to throw it all away.
The one on the looper, but that's all right.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Keep you over the line. light, or keep you where the light is.
Thank you.